I wanted to talk about kids this morning, which is one of those things where it can be so topical in our imagination that we kind of think, well, if I don't have any, or I don't know any that I care about, or I know some and I don't care for them at all, you know, all real options, this topic is not for me. You know, you're talking to the handful of people who are parents, grandparents, whatever. And the reason I wanted to do that this week is because I'm just kind of working my way in my own imagination through the Bible and thinking about moments in the Bible where people get totally reoriented around something, where they get a reboot. And we're about to start doing something different in this community around the way that we interact with the kids, the littler kids that are part of this community. And if you guys have been here any amount of time, you know that I have a core passion as a person for integrated life in family. We've made some countercultural choices as a family because of that. We educate our own kids at home. That's the largest, most obvious one. And the reason for that kind of is twofold. One is pedagogical. We just actually believe that when you know your learner, the way that a parent knows a child, there are things you can do as a teacher that a teacher that didn't know the child at that level can't do. And we wanted to engage with that and see how it would go. And the other reason is this idea of an integrated life as a family, that we didn't want to disintegrate that life around early education. So that was our choice. I'm not advocating for that for everyone. Very personal decision, very subjective. But the value behind it, I think, translates into other settings. And the value for me, at least the way I would articulate it, is the value of an integrated experience across age and stage. So a bit of a push back against our culture's inclination to put people into peer-based environments, keep them there for a long time in their early life, and then wonder why they can't function across those lines when they hit the end of that portion of their education. If we actually want kids to be at home with people that aren't at their age and stage, they have to be with people that aren't at their age and stage. They don't learn things theoretically. They learn things hands-on. They learn things concretely, especially when they're younger. So, before I start sounding like I'm on my homeschool soapbox, which happens very naturally for me, that's not what this is about. Here at the table, we've kind of wrestled with that, right? I mean, the kids are here. They're not part of some other community. They don't sort of arrive and vanish. They're here. They move around. They make noise. They play. They come and go. They're kind of part of the experience. I think there's something lovely about that. In our family's life, in different communities of faith, that's been a really fruitful experience. There are limitations to it as well. Because, among other things, this is a pretty heady, talky kind of gathering. We kind of get at it head first pretty often. Somebody stands up here and talks about an idea for a long time sometimes. Inordinately long on occasion, however one might measure these things. Well, even if you're an adult, you know what it's like to be 3/4 of the way in and know you're 3/4 of the way in and have to pee and wonder if you can leave or not. Or whatever it is, to just be distracted, to be kind of going, enough, you know? All right, so take that experience and take however many years you are past preschool or early school and add it into the mix, and you get what it's like to be a little person in this setting during that part of our gathering, right? That's not very fun. It's not engaging. It might be integrated physically, but it's not very integrated experientially. And there are people here who are parents or who just love children and love thinking about their experience who went, you know, we should be able to do better than this, and came with some ideas. And so that's partly what we're going to kick into gear next week. So we're going to kind of live with the tension. There's going to be part of our gathering where the kids are here, part of it where they're not. They'll kind of come and go. That'll be disruptive. We're going to talk more about disruption and faith in just a moment. I think we'll see as we kind of unfold this idea together this morning that there's a reason to think differently about that part of our life together than just to think of order or disorder. Anyway, that's why I wanted to get into that this week in particular. So there's a super short story in Luke 18, 15 to 17. Luke As I said in my email, Luke's got to be my favorite gospel because Luke just is so adamant that nobody gets left out. He's an outsider. He's not an insider in terms of the Hebrew people. He's a cultural outsider, but he's somebody who's a follower of Jesus. And he is just completely convinced that it is wrong for there to be a barrier in this story. It's hard for us to even imagine his context. It's hard for us to even imagine what he's taking on when he says, this isn't just for the Hebrews. This isn't just for the Jews. This is for everybody else. Because when any writer in a biblical setting says, this isn't just for the Jews, it's also for the Gentiles, they're saying in our language, this isn't just for a culturally inside group, this is for every cultural group. Because the world had only two groups from the Jewish perspective. The Jews and everybody that wasn't. And so when Luke takes that on, that's essentially what he's saying. He's just saying nobody's left out of this story. So I'm not going to illustrate it directly. I'm just going to let you imagine it. But in our cultural context, who are the others from the Christian point of view? Well, it partly depends what you turn your Christian beliefs into, doesn't it? The others might be people who don't live by some particular insider set of cultural values. They might be people who espouse some theological perspective or some cultural perspective that is different than the dominant one in your or my Christian experience. They might be somebody from another culture and religion entirely. They might be somebody who believes that there isn't any worthwhile expression that's religious. We can keep going. What Luke is saying when he's saying the story's for everybody is he's saying whatever those people, whoever those people are, whoever those groups are, if you think they're outside of the story that we call the good news, you are incorrect. This is not that kind of story. And one of the things that Luke does with real enthusiasm is records the parables of Jesus. John has almost none. Some of the other gospels have a cross-section of them, but Luke just goes crazy on them. And I think that there's a reason, given Luke's perspective about inclusivity in this story, why he does that. Can't know this, but little speculation is allowed, right? And I think the reason is because of the way parables behave. Parables are not prescriptive. Parables do this curious thing where they take one thing and they set it alongside another thing to make a point. But they are not like a moral fable. Parables are not morality tales. They're not the kind of story that comes to a tidy, all sewn up, this is what I meant to say, and this is what it means, kind of conclusion. In fact, a lot of Jesus' parables actually leave the listener with more questions than they had when he started telling the story, rather than more answers. And Luke, the guy who's saying, everybody's in, use your imagination or you're going to miss it, just buckets the parables into his gospel. And often as not, you read through Luke and you hit any one parable, never mind sequences of parables, and by the end you're kind of feeling punchy. What's the point? And I think Luke would be saying, the point is that we're going to set this alongside this, and if that doesn't stir you up, and if that doesn't make you think, if that doesn't make you work on this when you walk away from the storyteller, then you missed the point. The point is to walk away working on this. Not to walk away going, oh, that's settled, and everybody who doesn't believe what we just settled is what? An outsider! Wrong answer, right? So that's sort of Luke's kind of whole paradigm in this stuff. And I love that. I love that. So there's this little wee parable, two verses. That's a pithy story in any cultural setting. A little two-verse story in Luke about the little children and Jesus. I never know how much to make of the order parables fall in. I don't think it's actually necessarily deliberate, but Luke's a really thoughtful, intelligent writer. The possibility is certainly there. In this case, it's an interesting sequence. We might come back to that in a little bit. But I'm just going to read you the parable, and then we're going to do something parabolic with this. Okay, the shape of what we're going to do is kind of like the shape of a sequence of parables. I'm going to read you this parable, and Natalie's going to put it up on the screen. I don't know if we'll even be able to see it. We got all kinds of light. Oh, kind of. All right. Good. I'll read it for you. You can look, you can listen, you can take it in however you take it in. But I want you to, I want to encourage you to take it in the way that excites your imagination most naturally. So some of you right now need Play-Doh. I realize that. So for the tactile learners, I'm sorry, we're coming up short. But that didn't sound denigrating, did it? I mean, I didn't mean it that way. Just for people who learn by touching things. We don't have a touchable way to learn this right now. If you need to walk around while you're listening, you can. All right, here we go. Here's the story. People were also bringing babies to Jesus to have him touch them. When the disciples saw this, they rebuked them. But Jesus called the children to him and said, "Let the little children come to me and do not hinder them. For the kingdom of God belongs to such as these. I tell you the truth." And that "I tell you the truth" is a preface to a wisdom saying. It's a cultural way of setting up. Pay attention to this. "I tell you the truth. Anyone who will not receive the kingdom of God like a little child will never enter it." Trevor. Now, that was parable one. This is parable two.
This one goes out to all my sisters and all my brothers around the world who are overwhelmed by our social troubles and just want to hurl or curl up into a ball and wait till the pain passes. This goes out to all the hurting hearts, scarred souls, and bruised bones, tired vagabonds trying to find a home, to the used, abused, broken, and alone. Let's play. For a moment, let's shed the cloaks of our pain. Let the agony that's wrought from the insane experiences, from the disdain, fade away from the disturbances. In laughter that is tragicomic, in hope that is cosmically ironic, in music that is soul-soothing sonic. What is something you love that brings you joy? For me, I like to lay at the top of a hill and my body deploy as I roll like a barrel to the bottom. I stop halfway to reset my course because I turn too much during my descent. Anyone who's ever rolled down a hill will know what I'm talking about. Then I get to my destination and lay still. I don't move because this moment is wondrous. And also, I don't want to throw up. But the grass is glittering, great green sheens. The sun radiates red rays that caress my skin in their perfect way. But I don't want them to overindulge because I'm a pasty ginger and I don't want a sunburn. The oxygen that I invite into my lungs feels as vitalizing as it did on day one. Or so I think. I can't quite remember with certainty, but I like to imagine that it gave me this energy. I also find my soul soars as I explore the invited vibrational contours of rhythm that allures through a song that cures as line become blurred, and I am reassured that beauty spurs on through mixed, masterful, majestic melodies. Whew, I gotta rest from all this dancing. I'm covered in sweat, and my heart is racing like a full-fueled jet. When I am moved by joy, the anchor of despair that tries to draw me into a nihilistic sea is thrust off my collapsing chest as I smile at life's irony. And as I stand, dance, love, laugh defiantly, my soul swells with an insurrectionist urgency. Now, I do not talk about play lightly, as if I'm coming from a place of naivety. I do not mean to treat your wounds with levity, but we do need to remember our humanity and the inner frontier that manifests human dignity, that says, come what may, I'ma press on with vibrancy. For if we let them take our soul, then they have control. But if we celebrate in the midst of grief, then we fight with the most potent weapon that no power can take, hope. And hope defies all wickedness and shines forth like a bright burning brazier. It's an infinite container and a rational explainer that defies dictators. As long as hope remains alive in you and in I, and if we allow and give in to the gleam in our eyes and give in to the surprising bursts of joy, we will overcome. Some of you dance, laugh, splish, splash, eat deep, rock a beat, lay in the sun, hug someone, listen to a stranger, forgive a lover, share some money, find something funny, sit still, take care of the ill, meditate, pray, hold hope for today. May joy cover you like a warm blanket in a cold winter night. May you take time today and take time to play.
So Trev read me this piece last week.
I don't know. I think that was awesome. So he read me this piece last week, and we after I kind of recovered, because there's a lot there to let soak in. I said, so I'm gonna ask you the same question now that I asked you then. How come we stop playing?
Well, the perspective that I'm coming from is definitely one that favors the sociological viewpoint. And so with that in mind, there's this society that we have that encourages efficiency. And it's always been in that trajectory in Western civilization, right? There's been this continual move to make things as utilized as possible, to make things as efficient as possible. The Romans really cranked it up with that and taught us better ways to live life efficiently. And we've done it especially now with things of making money. And I'm convinced that efficiency has no room for play. It can't, because what is efficient about it?
What does efficiency turn play into?
It turns it into seriousness. It turns it into business. It turns it into work. And that cuts out those dynamics of relationship, which is one of the key things that play enables, is trust, right? Trust builds relationship, and trust is essentially unutilizable economically. You can't gain from that.
You can't monetize trust.
Right. And as a matter of fact, there's a lot of, we're reading about city life right now and the metropolitan man, these different industrial revolutionary sociologists, and they talk about how we become less and less socially integrated, so we become less and less individuals that are known as we become more cosmopolitan, because there is no binding trust, there's no binding relationships, there's just money, and we all need it, and we need each other because of that. But the play aspect in there isn't important, because that leads to trust, and trust is about meaning, and meaning is not a city banner. There's no city banner, right?
Right.
So we're all trying to be very serious.
So what happens to, I mean, one of the things that's connected at the hip to trust is vulnerability. So under the idea that you're talking about, what happens to vulnerability? Vulnerability, by the way, is very different than accountability. There's a way, just as a preface, you can turn on that for just a sec. But we get these ideas confused, and we get them confused in religious settings pretty often in some pretty high-profile ways, I think. This idea that I'm actually letting someone into my life when I tell them what to ask me about, it's not a bad idea. We just shouldn't confuse it with vulnerability. That idea actually is the idea of, when you say to somebody, you can shine a light in here and see what's going on in my life, that's a good thing. That can be a helpful thing. But vulnerability actually hands somebody the light and says, you can shine the thing wherever you want. It's a different thing, right? Anyway, what happens to vulnerability in the context of the ideas that you're talking about?
Well, I can't be vulnerable to you. We're in a competitive market, you and I. And so any piece of vulnerability gives you an advantage if you're thinking of how you can step in. take advantage of resource income and increase for yourself. So this idea that we're pitted against each other, if I say, hey, this is a huge weakness in my life, it can't exist by the rules of the market. I can't be vulnerable to you. And this happens on a massive scale in our cities where we're suspect of one another and we can never actually know each other, because to know each other requires both the things that we excel at and the things that we're terrible at. And we want to be known with those things, but we're not allowed to be. And it's very hard to untrain yourself or even become aware of those ideas that are ingrained within us, right? It's hard to see the lens if no one's asking those questions.
Yeah. Well, we could, you can sit down, because otherwise we're just gonna. You're awesome. Oh man. Okay, so when Trevor and I have lunch, he always, at some point, he has to leave to go to class or something, but we're never done these conversations. There's lots to chew on there, isn't there? The antidote. What's the antidote? What's the corrective? What's the thing that can help us if what Trevor's talking about has some merit, and I believe it does? We can't even see the way in which we turn trust into leverage in our culture unless we ask those kind of questions. And maybe that's one of the reasons why we have, in our ancient wisdom, texts, parables. Because parables actually encourage us to think differently about the issues of life than the pragmatic nature of our culture does. Now, what Trev and I were just talking about, if there's a continuum of kind of ideas or experience here, we were kind of way over on this part of the continuum somewhere, in terms of this vulnerable relationship, relationships monetized, trust turned into a commodity, all those kind of ideas. The sociological perspective definitely shines a different light on those issues than the perspective of organization, or the perspective of business, or the perspective of professionalism, and so on. So the vantage point that we look at all these things from is pretty important. But I just want to suggest that there's a couple of core ideas in what Trev was talking about that I think are essential for us when we think about this parable just a little bit. One of them was that play, by definition, has no utility. It's good for nothing. If we're actually playing, we're not training. If we're actually playing, we're not competing. These things are distinguishable from one another, at least as ideas. I know they overlap sometimes. We get going in a competition and we forget we're competing. We might just find ourselves playing. It's a different space, and we know that. We know that by experience. We know how different it is to be caught up in something to the place where we're not wondering how it's going to go. We're not wondering if this is a win or a loss. We are just in there, up to our eyeballs. We forget ourselves. And that is the window into, if there's a simple way to say at least what I think the corrective is, that forgetting of ourselves is a window into the antidote or the corrective, which is actually living life as though we need one another. So the short word is community, right? I know we flogged that thing. Somebody give me a better word. Living as though we need one another. It's hard to even believe in a culture where just playing functionally doesn't often feel like it's true. We come to these points in our lives where all of a sudden we go, you know what? All the resources I have at my command, and they are considerable, will not actually address this thing in my life or my heart or my soul. This seems to need something that I can't buy or leverage. This needs something that is about the heart. This needs something that is more like the forgetting of the self that we experience in true play. Robert Farrar Capon says about parables that in high seriousness and with equally high glee, we should play with Scripture. The treasure of the kingdom is not something to be kept in the attic and dragged out only on Sundays for lone exhibitions in museums, nor is it something that people should stare at only when wearing solemn faces and three-piece suits. We may be the masters of the treasures of God, but we were meant, first of all, to spend huge amounts of time in the attic just poring over it and trying all of it for size. And we were meant, above all, to invite the world up into the attic to play dress-up with us. We're supposed to be kids, you see. Which is why Jesus says, "I thank you, Father, Lord of heaven and earth, that you have hidden these things from the wise and prudent and revealed them to babes." Capon says, "You can't get more encouragement than that for what he calls holy horsing around." I know, what a great picture. That if we can come to this our sacred text with the attitude of play, that I'm not coming to this so I can walk away with three rules for successful interactions with children. Whatever, you know, a methodology. That's not why we're coming to the story. We're actually coming to the story to try something on for size, with imagination, the way you try on a treasure that you find in the trunk in the attic. In our house, we don't have a useful attic. The basement has to do. But if you ever visit our home and you look under there's a pool table down there in the basement. The basement is mostly just this big play area with like swingy things hanging from the ceiling and all kind of good fun kid stuff. Under the pool table are these three huge Tupperware bins. And if you haul them out, they're sort of designated. This is kind of stuff, clothing and things that have at least female gender kind of in their history. It's the dress box. And then there's one that's kind of more the male gender. There's the, sort of the suits and the pants and the, you know, whatever, all the kind of obvious old guy clothes are. And then there's another one that's just all hats and wigs and scarves and all that stuff. Get a bunch of kids in our basement, leave them down there for a couple hours. You come down and those three bins are emptied all over the basement. And there's people down there dressed up in whatever. Like, just, you can't know what went on in their head when they opened the bin to get to that, you know? And often as not, if you leave them down there long enough, what happens is one of them comes upstairs, if that's where the adults is, and says, "Could you guys come down? We have a play." For serious. And so you go down there, and they'll have the chairs, and it's all laid out, and you kind of got to sit down and behave like the audience, right? And then they deliver whatever this thing is that they created out of these bins of old clothes. And sometimes, I mean, the plays, I haven't hit one yet where I went, "We have a latent genius." Like, it just hasn't happened. You know, they're, as theater, they don't have a lot to offer. But my word, if they did, I'd wonder if my children lost their sense of play and lurched over into utility. But they didn't bother. They just kind of went, "What does this make me think of?" And then that's what they gave me. And it's awesome. They hate to clean up, you know. So much fun creating things. It's so not fun putting them away. Think like that. Think like Trevor was thinking when he wrote that piece about the connection between play and hope. Think what it might mean to take something that you and I believe is true about God, about the world that we live in, and then to try it on for size in the world that we live in. What on earth could Jesus possibly be talking about when he says things like, "I tell you the truth, anyone who will not receive the kingdom of God like a little child will never enter it." Well, let's just park that for one sec and go to the disciples' perspective, okay? The disciples are taking this whole enterprise of the kingdom very seriously. We get that. It's serious business. They have, as one of them points out in a subsequent parable in the same chapter, they've left family, home, business. They've made serious sacrifices to be part of this, right? So this is serious business. Jesus is a rabbi. You pay attention to the rabbis. You take them seriously. So far, so good. We get all that. When the disciples take the seriousness of the kingdom and they plug it in to everyday life, what does it equal? It equals them getting between Jesus and the children and saying, "There's no place for you here. You do not belong in the serious enterprise of the kingdom. The rabbi's a busy guy. He's got places to go. He's got people to see. He's got things to teach. Yada, yada, yada. You know, off you go, you little rug rat. Go catch a fish. Go do something. Go play." Like it was a lesser thing. And one of the things that Jesus says to the disciples with real clarity in this particular two-verse parable is, don't you dare. Don't you dare. Do not get in the way of those who come to me with imagination. If you do, you just screwed up something that is fundamental to the reality of what Jesus called the kingdom, which is that you can't even find it without imagination. Never mind living it. So whatever else is true for us as adults, in this setting or any other setting, as regards literal children and the kingdom, at the very least, we need to not get in the way. We need to not hinder what's happening. When children seek, like we do, but in their own unique way, an encounter with God. See, kids are not actually trying to turn their questions into propositional truth. They're just curious. They're not trying to turn the answer that I give them if they come to me with a question, whether they come to me with it out loud or whether they come to me with it embodied. They're not actually trying to turn the answer into a new rule. They're just curious. If we could do two things as a community out of this set of ideas, the two that come to mind would first of all be to ask ourselves constantly, not just how can we not hinder children having that experience, or being, at least that possibility being open, but how could we help? Well, that's kind of led some imaginative people in our community to say, let's try this with the little people. So we're going to do that. Not doing any harm is a very different thing than trying to do something good. One of those is a little bit insipid. A little bit kind of wimpy, right? Well, it's intriguing to me that in light of that, if we just kind of keep moving along in the parables here, Luke chapter 19, we come to the parable of the 10 minus. I don't know if you know it by that name. Basically, a story of a rich guy gives some underlings some money, goes on a long trip, comes back. One of them's invested it, taken some risks with it. He's done well, he's rewarded. The other one's kind of invested, a little less capacity for risk, but he's done well also with it. He's kind of stuck his neck out, he's rewarded. The third one says, you're a pretty harsh taskmaster. I was kind of afraid, so I took the bucks you gave me and I put them under the bed, and this is yours, and there you go. You got yours back. That's the one that gets stepped on in the parable. That's the one that is roundly chastised in the parable. That is the behavior of not doing any harm, which is very different than sticking your neck out and saying, in an imaginative life, with this story, with this idea, with this truth, if you want, what might happen if? What could we do with what we have here? When I was talking to Sasha and Naomi about this kid stuff, they're so awesome. And this happened, we had a little microcosm of this when Mike said, what do we need and who could do stuff? That's the way this community solves things, and I love that. It's super exciting. Somebody's like, Kim, whoever she was, why Kim has a bunch of soap at home continues to intrigue me, but anyway, she does, and so she's always very clean whenever I've met her, so that's lovely. So Kim says, I got a bunch of soap, and somebody else is like, I've got this, and I'm pretty sure I could get some toilet paper here on my bike, and whatever, right? So we just solved it. That's kind of the way this community does stuff. There's not a lot of infrastructure, but there you go. Something good happened. Some people just stepped up and said, we could do this. That's kind of what Sasha and Naomi and some other folks that have gathered around this kids thing have done. They just kind of looked around and went, what kind of spaces do we have? What kind of time do we have? Who's here? What do we have to work with? What are we not doing? See, you guys have fun with the soap. And then they just said, well, let's try this. That's the kind of behavior. That's exactly the kind of behavior that Jesus is pointing us toward in the parable. When he says, if you don't come to the kingdom like a kid, you're not even gonna get in. If you don't come with, what do kids come with? Honesty, vulnerability, which is what we were talking about when Trev and I were talking, the opposite of utilitarian relationship. Honesty, vulnerability, passion, imagination, trust, the stuff of the kingdom. The stuff that life just whacks flat sometimes, right? You know? Can you think of anything that's caused you to be more reluctant to trust? Anything come to mind? You know? I'm not going to ask you to tell me. God knows, we've all got our lists, right? There's a reason why we stopped playing. Part of it, Trevor touched on. There's sort of the whole socioeconomic framework in the Western mind that reduces vulnerability, pushes it down, says that's a bad idea. You do that, you're gonna get shafted. We know about that. So how do we come back from that to life in the kingdom? That requires imagination. That requires play. That requires trust. That requires vulnerability. That requires coming to God and the people who also seek God together with us the way that a kid comes to things. I don't know about you, but I don't find that easy. That's hard. There's all sorts of reasons to not do that. Jesus is saying, if you seriously want to engage this thing called the kingdom, you got to do it. So, I conclude, when I have that kind of combination of experiences, Jesus says, if you want to encounter the kingdom, you got to come like a kid. And I'm going, I don't know how to do that. That I need help. And that's what brings me back, as I said earlier, to community. To actually, in choosing to arrange my life in such a way that I provide occasion to know and be known. To actually live life with people in a way that opens me to them and them to me. That behaves more like you can take the light and shine it wherever you want, then would you please ask me how I'm doing with this? And calls that a framework for growth in the kingdom. It's way scarier. Because you know what happens? They find out that I'm one of the people that should be an outsider. And it probably doesn't take them very long. They find out that I don't necessarily follow the rules that I espouse very well. They find out that, well, you know, that I'm an idiot. That just really wants to be in the kingdom. But most days, doesn't really know how to play my way in there. Because I'm taking it all so seriously. And I need some help. The parable right before the little children and Jesus is the parable of the tax collector and the Pharisee. Pharisee's the guy who's got it sorted out. He knows how to pray. He knows how to talk like a religious guy. He knows how to look good when he shows up at church, at synagogue. And he shows up and he looks good. And he sounds good. And he's got it dialed. And the tax collector doesn't even look up when he comes in. He's just like, God have mercy. And Jesus says, you know, guess who gets in? Guess who got the ear of God? The one who just came the way they were. The way kids do. That's one of the reasons why I've often said in our context that the noises of children are the noises of community. They are not considered noises. Well, we spent a bunch of time trying to get the phone line working, so we started a little bit late, and I've gone on. I want to just leave us with one more thing, and then we'll sing together a bit. If you need to leave at a particular time, do what you need to do. We'll sing for a little while together, though, so these things can kind of shuffle around inside of us. Mike Tyus, I don't think I've told you this story, but Mike likes to tell people about his church, and every once in a while he has fascinating conversations with people about the table. And so somebody fairly recently asked him, so where do you go to church? And he said, I go to the table. And they said, oh, you mean that New Age church? The one that's always trying different things. And Mike and I kind of chuckled a little bit about that. I went away thinking about it, though. And I thought, you know, what came to mind, because pictures often come to mind when I'm doing that kind of stuff in my head, was a drawing made by the son of a famous canoeist, Mike Mason. One of his son was a cartoonist, a caricaturist. And I had a t-shirt for a while that had a guy in a whitewater kayak doing this trick off a wave where the kayak was like upside down right out of the wave. This is kind of this wild, crazy thing. And what it said underneath it was, if you ain't flying, you ain't trying. And when Mike told me about that conversation about the table, I thought, fine. That's fine. If you got to find a label in a category, you just go right ahead. I would rather have that experience by far than not be trying. That is a failure. Getting curiously labeled, that's not a failure. That's life. It's fine. But if you're not flying, you're not trying. If you're not playing, if you're not going up into the attic and opening the box of the story and trying it on for size and going, what does this look like when I walk out there? What does this evoke? What does this stir up? When I put this on, what happens to me? When I put this idea or this story or this value on, how do I walk out into the world different? How does that make the world different? I mean, sometimes, of course, you do that and you just get laughed at, right? You know? I mean, you just... It's a struggle with the kids. It's usually delight, but sometimes it's so absurd that I just find myself going, I have to just watch it so I'm not laughing at you. I have to make sure I'm laughing with you because, man, that's crazy. Especially when they roll out the plays, you know? That's so bad. Anyway, why shouldn't it be? But sometimes that happens to us. We're on the other end, right? We put something on that's about the kingdom, and we walk out into the rest of the world, and we say, you want to see the play I wrote? You want to hear this? I want to do this for you. And we just don't get received. And then we have the experience that the culture surrounds us with, which says, oh, no, you shouldn't do that again. You should definitely not do that again, because that's going to hurt. Well, you know, I think sometimes that's true. Sometimes it's going to hurt. But if we keep living life with imagination, if we keep wading back into the stories, if we keep asking ourselves questions like, how does a kid come to someone that they trust? What would it look like if I behaved like that in the world that I live in? If we keep doing that, and we just keep wading back in there, we're going to keep wading back into what Jesus called the kingdom. Sometimes it's going to be awesome. Sometimes it's going to be terrible. Sometimes we're going to leave confused. Sometimes we're going to leave ecstatic. We don't get to know that going in. We just get to do what Jesus said to do, which is to come to this whole thing that's called the kingdom, the way the kids come. We get to figure out what that looks like and what that means. That's our job. That's why the parable doesn't end with a prescription. It just ends.